This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by one of the most brilliant sort of litigators with a focus on what's going on in healthcare and private equity in the country. We're joined by David Pivnik, who heads up the Healthcare and Life Sciences Group at McGuire Woods. We're going to ask David today, what are the big cases he's seeing in private equity? I know there's been just a flood of false claims suit. There's this very aggressive, growth-oriented, private equity-sponsored practices and companies. Some of those end up being targets and so forth. David, what are you seeing today? I know that you're incredibly busy with investigations and demands and all kinds of things. What are the kind of things you're seeing in the private equity world today in the you know, Department of Justice looking at things and investigations and so forth?
Sure. So, I mean, I think as a general statement, the Department of Justice is starting to take a closer look at private equity investment in healthcare. I don't right now perceive that to be an overarching look where the focus is on private equity based purely on the fact of investment. It's more the nature of that involvement and how the private equity funds are handling things. So where we've sort of seen areas of inquiry and the government taking a closer look or engaging in some scrutiny, including in that settlement that you referenced, is a couple of things. So that settlement really dealt with the government looking at the control that the private equity fund exercised, and specifically the fact that it had board seats and control of the board, and that conduct was alleged to have occurred that was raised, you know, to the board and including the private equity fund members who were on the board, and not, you know, inappropriate action was taken, or at least in that instance, sufficiently appropriate action was not taken. So, you know, that's an area where the government is definitely starting to evaluate the role of private equity funds, is their placement on the board, the control of healthcare platforms they've invested in, and whether or not they're acting appropriately when compliance concerns come up. And I don't want that to sound alarmist, because I don't think it's, you know, a per se responsibility, but I think it is a good reminder to folks that, you know, because of the nature of board roles and the impact on company operations, there really is a need to take compliance seriously, to make sure that compliance concerns are raised at the board level and are then appropriately addressed and not just, you know, swept under the rug, so to speak. And a couple other areas.
Well, let me ask you this, because one of the allegations referred recently is that the private equity-backed companies, sponsored companies, are just a little bit better or more complete or more aggressive about hiring enough coders to make sure that they would call fully coding or properly coding. Someone attacking it would say up coding or coding to the top of the license kind of concept almost. What do you make of that? Is there, I mean, that the concept being the private equity funds are smart enough to invest in coding. The coding is not intended to sort of reduce revenues, but intended to better code, that, you know, you put a coder at the elbow of the physician, everybody makes more money. What's your sense of that kind of allegation out there? Or is it just very much case by case?
I think it's case by case is definitely the short answer. I personally represented clients on a couple of occasions dealing with that specific allegation. And I think a lot of it really does boil down to the purposes of why the coding processes were updated and the approach that's taken. I think there's a difference between trying to build to accomplish certain codes or to simply increase the distribution versus taking efforts in order to ensure that coding is accurate. And if that accuracy may involve, you know, identifying and picking up codes that were previously not being billed, or if the services were previously being consistently undercoded, fixing that on a going forward basis, I don't see that as being a big basis of liability. But if it's simply a goal of increasing a coding distribution or trying to code higher, that creates problems. And so I think a lot of it is not just in the messaging, but specific efforts that are undertaken. You know, are you retaining, you know, an EMR that's going to help with the coding process and has systems in place to help ensure accuracy? Are you going to engage people to provide training both on the compliance and the billing and coding side to ensure that things are being done correctly? Are you going to have, you know, certified coders who are employed or work with a third party that's reputable? And then how you monitor things, you know, going forward, doing periodic auditing to identify issues and ensure accuracy and not just looking at the revenue or other financial metrics is all going to be important. So I don't think it's sort of a one size fits all, you know, question and answer. It's more a function of, you know, making sure that accuracy is the focus, even if that does lead to capturing dollars. It needs to be about accuracy. And similarly, it shouldn't be a message of, well, just provide more services and we can generate more. They need to still be appropriate services. Or in many cases, frankly, it's an issue of the medical care doesn't actually change. It's not additional services being provided at all, but they were being underbilled before, in which case you're capturing revenue that was appropriately available in the first place. And it's really hard to make an upcoding claim in that circumstance.
Thank you. And take a moment, David, on what other issues are top and center, top of mind for you today as you see so many things?
Sure. So, I mean, in the private equity space in that world, in the false claims world, I mean, the two other areas we've seen issues come up, you know, pertain to one, compensation structures or other things that are actually implemented by the private equity fund. And the government obviously would look at that and say you're directly involved. And then similarly, instances where the private equity fund may have identified potential concerns as a deal is being put together, and those concerns are not appropriately addressed, or more specifically, the fund may attempt to benefit from the concerns without fixing things on a going forward basis. So I think it's a good reminder, again, that compliance needs to be part of the calculus. Beyond sort of just the fraud, I think there's a lot of activity that we're seeing related to the pandemic. Things are still taking shape. So some of that is DOJ enforcement activity relating to COVID care. Some of it are more simple issues as people start to realign workforces and make staffing decisions and things of that nature. We've seen additional challenges that are increasingly coming up in what's become, I think, a very interesting workforce alignment over the last couple of years.
Thank you very much. This point on workforce alignment and trying to automate things or automating them correctly, maybe leading to more revenues, maybe not, but trying to automate correctly so you don't end up automating to upcode is such an important point too.
Absolutely.
David, I want to thank you always for sharing your wisdom and intelligence with us on the Becker Private Equity Podcast. David Pivnik, he heads up the Life Sciences and Healthcare Group with Bart Walker at McGuire Woods, large practice in life sciences and healthcare, and most of it intersecting with private equity. David Pivnik, thank you for joining us today on the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.